This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Here is Albert Bates in London.
Welcome to the climate change session. As you will probably agree, it's very important to highlight and showcase permaculture and what it's doing in climate change mitigation. We had quite a lot of offers for this session. We chose three very good presentations. First of all, we've got Albert Bates, former president of the Global Eco-Village Network and currently head of their NGO delegation at the UN Climate Talks in Paris this December, holding a plenary event called Eco-Villages 10,001 Solutions for Climate Change. Albert has worked for 40 years in the field of integrated development and has trained people from more than 60 countries. He is also the author of numerous books on energy, environment and history, The Biochar Solution, Financial Collapse Survival Guide, and most recently, Pour Evian on Your Radishes. Please welcome.
Nice. Okay. You know, this topic is a bit daunting. Are there any hedge fund managers in the room? If you don't want to say, it's okay. You know, if you're a hedge fund manager, right about now, you're pretty worried about what's a safety place for your fund. What should you be putting hedge on? And you're worried about silver and gold. They're manipulated. Bitcoin, the yuan, renminbis, all manipulated. We know from the LIBOR scandal, all that stuff is very ephemeral. Commercial real estate in London, anyone? So there are no longer any safe havens. And these are manipulated by kleptocrats at best, CIA and MI6 at worst. Second homes on private island might look good now, but what about in 5 years? And here's, you know, a safe haven I'm going to give you. This is what this is about. If you read that it was about eco-villages, yes, sort of. That's a subset of the larger picture. Eco-villages that are carbon negative, that continuously build value, that have social worth that exceeds any currency worth. If you're interested either as an investor or designer, by all means, let's talk. I came to this by going through the carbon cycle and looking at sources and sinks and seeing what are our points of intervention. And you need to work on both sides of the ledger. If you're going to change the dynamic, reverse climate change, get us back to a pre-Anthropocene concentration in the atmosphere and the oceans, there's really only one sink that you have available to you, and that's the soil. It's the ground. It's what's under our feet. And that's the one that we can most safely work with. The tools that we've come to use are these available tools on the sink side. You're not going to like geoengineering. You can't afford it. It won't work. But these things work, and they can scale quickly. And when I use the term permafuels down here, I mean local, socially responsive, ecologically restorative, waste-to-energy renewable systems with carbon capture and sequestration. Here's an example. This is a beaner. It's a camping stove. This is the beaner.
Can you buy one?
Yeah, it's 20 euros. It comes from Italy. It's worldstove.com. You take this on your backpack. It's called a beaner because you can put a carabiner through this hole, stick it on your belt or your backpack. You take it camping with you. You get to your campsite. You start looking around for some pine needles or pine cones or cardboard or scrap wood or different kinds of things out of the dump. You look for a can that's in the dump. Any can will do. Doesn't matter whether you're in India or the Philippines or South Africa. All cans are the same dimension. And so it's actually geared to fit exactly into this space. Poke a few holes at the bottom. Drop your material inside. Drop a lit match in. Takes a few minutes to get going. You're going to get a little bit of smoke at first, a yellow flame. But as it gets going, it heats up. The metal heats up. And so as it does, it forces the gases out of the biomass. The gases travel up the inside of the jacket because of the holes I punched at the bottom. As they travel up, they find that there's nowhere to exit. So they enter back in at these ports on the top, these little venturis. And as they come through, they cross over the flame. And as they cross over the flame, they ignite. So now you have this blue mandala, like looking down at a gas range. And there's no smoke because it's cut off oxidation. It's cut off the oxygen flow below. And it's becoming pyrolysis, absence of oxygen, heating the biomass, turning it into gas, burning the gas. All you're getting is a little water vapor coming off the top. It doesn't create any ash. You can cook on the stove like this with one load for about 90 minutes because it's about 30% more efficient. So you've made your Norse soup mix or your spaghetti, and now you're done, and you quench the fire and you take out what's left, which is hard carbon, biochar, and you put it in the soil. You just had a carbon negative camping experience. You've sequestered your footprint. Now, there are models of this. The BioLite I didn't bring, but it's a model that produces electricity, so you can charge your laptop or you can charge your cell phone. If you're using GPS on your phone or you have an Apple Watch and you want to charge that overnight while you're camping, you can do it because you've got a little thermocouple that while you're cooking your dinner, it's making biochar and it's giving you back electricity. This is a model that can scale. There are now for sale over-the-counter versions of this that do 100 kilowatts, and they produce biochar for gardens or for other uses, which I'll go through a little. So this is something I showed in the Cuba slideshow for those of you who were there. The idea in both Jordan and Cuba, I talked about cool food, making cool products and branding them as net carbon sequestering. For me, cool is a stickier meme than carbon negative or carbon minus. You have to think about the neurolinguistic patterning and how our reptilian brains respond to tribal cues, right? We're seekers of tribeness amongst our mates, right? This is our evolutionary track, that we are a herd animals. And so we look for cool things. We're cool hunters, all of us. And cool memes. So what we're looking for here is something like cool food that's made, putting the biochar at the base of the cacao tree, taking the cacao pods and turning them into biochar, a full cycling. And so you can then brand it as a cool food, like charcoalit. I don't know if Craig Sams is here, but here's an idea for you. Cool feed. So now we've learned that the biochar as an alimentary additive has beneficial effects, particularly for farm animals. You can reduce the need for antibiotics. You can greatly drop the supply of antibiotics. And that actually has added impacts in that we're getting some feedback. This is one reason that Big Pharma is mounting an anti-biochar campaign, just like the fake tobacco studies in the 1950s. Their business model depends on selling you more antibiotics, and this is a business model that's going the opposite direction. Cool buildings. So biochar paints and plasters, geotextiles, living roofs. We're actually finding by putting biochar into a clay render or lime render that it works the same way a charcoal filter on a cigarette works. It cleans the air in the room. It takes out pollen and mold spores. This is huge in many parts of the world. If you have hay fever, you can appreciate this. So it's biobiology. It's room air conditioning, room cleaning of the air, cleaning sick buildings by putting a simple paint that has a charcoal core to it. And it can be several layers deep and it still works if the wall breathes at all. And you can think also about using the biochar in sequence. Your cob building that you built for the course falls apart after a few years, or you're not going to need it anymore, and you move it, take that and put that in the garden, and now what have you got? The biochar is going back into the garden. Or it can go onto a living roof, and now you're sequestering carbon in a couple different ways. We're just beginning to tap what some of the things that biochar can do. There's weird science everywhere. Who knew that it can block Wi-Fi or infrared signals? But they're using it now in gully suits for snipers. Because it blocks your IR signature. And you also have the potential for, if you're worried about the Faraday box effect of the building that you live in, why not plaster it with biochar? You won't get very good Wi-Fi reception, but you have a comfortable night's sleep with no electromagnetic fields. This also plays into the people who have grow rooms in their basement. Avoid detection. So, cool energy. Biochar replacing cathodes in fuel cells to create better storage. And new studies from China about the charge potential of charred banana peels. So you can imagine charging phones and things by having a little pyrolytic converter that can make your own battery. And solar refrigerator in Guatemala that's 10% better, 10 times better at flash cooling with a biochar medium under a glass top, meaning that you can make ice with cardboard and aluminum in anywhere where there's direct sunlight using something like biochar. So I showed this in Cuba, and the idea is of a cascade model, stack functions, multiple yields, and you need to imagine these in the context of whole systems approaches, such as eco-village. The idea that you create, you're doing terra preta formation in everything you do, whether it's building or gardening or energy systems, transportation, and so forth. And you can sequence the material as it goes through the cycle from the time it's harvested. And I take a lot of bamboo and turn it into biochar and can make 3 or 4 wheelbarrow loads in about a half an hour. And then that goes through a compost operation, and actually it helps the compost. It speeds up the compost. I can add it as a very fine powder to compost teas, and it goes to the garden. I can have it as a water treatment. It can go from the water treatment use to be going into conditioner for silage, where it actually reduces the bad ferments in silage and increases the good ferments in silage. And then it's eaten by the cattle over winter, becomes a digestive supplement for the cows. They don't need the antibiotics. It goes into the litter in the barn, and it actually reduces the ammonia smell. And then you go from there as a manure conditioner. It gets hauled away and put into compost. It becomes a soil conditioner. And from the soil amendment, it becomes carbon sequestration, where it's going to stay in the soil because it's recalcitrant carbon. It's a hard crystalline form. It's going to stay there for 1,000 years. It's not going back to become next year's plants. It's in a form that's going to take it from the atmosphere, deprive the atmosphere for a life cycle of considerable length. And then that's actually going to serve the oceans as well, because the oceans are under stress from the atmosphere. So we're hoping to drop the whole thing by putting it all in the soil. I did a study that was in Permaculture Activist, which is now Permaculture Design magazine, and also another one that appeared in Permaculture last year in the UK, that was looking at eco-villages and how much they already are cool. How much they net sequester. And we found that Earth Haven was net sequestering 30% more than its residents' footprints in greenhouse gas emissions from all sources, visitors, travel, businesses, and so forth. If you looked at Ecodorf Siebenlinden, you got a very substantial net sequestration. Findhorn in Scotland, even with all the visitors, because of the Caledonian reforestation efforts that they do. And the farm, my community, 5 times the footprint is being sequestered each year. And that's primarily from forest. Forest is the big wedge. By putting more trees in and keeping those trees growing, bringing them to maturity, using a lot of forest products, we get cool. So this is about how you get cultural traction. And we live in a world of style. We are herd animals. And you have to ask what attracts people. What are the carrots, not the sticks? We've got plenty of sticks coming out of UN climate conferences and scary headlines in the news. What are the carrots? And permaculture, obviously, can provide a very strong carrot. We can have a much better planet if we follow simple rules. And in the world of style, what attracts people is having something that's neat and got a story behind it, and it's a kind of a fun story to tell your friends. We were doing a permaculture course last week in Iceland, and we were doing a design exercise for a local farmer. And the farmer said there's something he required in our design. He wanted a feature in the design that would be quite interesting. So I said, okay, that's the QI component, right? We want something to be quite interesting. The idea of that came around to us. We're doing a quite interesting company now. It's called ECO2. It's in the pre-launch phase. And it's not dissimilar to what Ethan and the folks at TerraGenesis are doing with regenerative real estate design. It's exactly what International Permaculture Design is planning. I'm a CPO of this company, a chief permaculture officer, which is something every company should have, I feel. And we are open source, easily replicated, but we want to reach out and hire you. We will need lots of more designers to do these projects. We apply community-based plus riparian methodology, holistic management, mob grazing, keyline, biochar, energy capture and storage, alley crops, offset density, reafforestation. It's not a secret formula. It's open source. What we're doing is creating a model, beginning with site surveys, going there, living with the people, visioneering with the stakeholders, acquiring needed expertise as needed, Landsat imaging, legal government liaisons. You know, we want to do plant leaf protein, so we bring in Dave Kennedy. Biochar Bob is on the ground right now. Green Capital. Chris Nesbitt came over from Belize to look at the potentials there for different food foresting, bioenergy and protein cascades. The deliverables for the local community, energy independence at 1/7 of the capital expenditures of photovoltaics or wind. A green school. I don't know how many are familiar with John Hardy and what he's doing in Bali. Roadless wilderness preservation, 95% offset. Investor return of investment in the early going of 20 to 30% APR. Net sequestration of approximately 1,000 megatons of carbon per year, naturally increasing without further intervention, and eco-villages. Our company is just starting off the first grid eco-village community, working at the scale of a watershed with an underserved, disenfranchised, overexploited base population yearning for empowerment and a better future for their children. We're working at the scale of watershed. Our intended first-year deliverables are generating potable water, 100% waste treatment, biomass to energy, food, biofertilizers, bioproteins, and some other products from 200% carbon-negative integrated microbiorefinery for small-scale production. We can't get any of this accomplished without support from the existing residents. So we ask. We become the community. We work together to design our shared future. Scaling up, we can take this to 10 petagrams, 10 gigatons of carbon per year very quickly, 10 years. Fossil fuels are now 5.6 gigatons per year, so it would erase that by nearly double. If you remove fossil fuels expeditiously, we can talk about getting back to pre-industrial atmospheric greenhouse gas levels by mid to late century, barring a clathrate gun already triggered or some other black swan event already in play. In which event, this is still very much the best way to spend the closing of an epoch. Our job is a garden planet that can support continued evolution of life in all its forms. There are many possible routes that these steps can take. They're not mutually exclusive. This is our showcase project, location undisclosed for the moment while the land is being secured. We're working with the government to set aside a huge amount as national park. It's car-free. Off-grid, but connected. No export capitalism is required. Accessible to sail routes in the Caribbean. A pirate-proof food forest. Mm-hmm. A moderate microclimate. A hedge for the future. And a model for all manner of de-development in the degrowth era. We are recruiting here. Before Petra collapse or Ponzi collapse, we can install CPOs in both large and small firms working in any of these fields. Biomass, food, fertilizer, energy, waste management. Everything is food for something, and the first step is recapturing waste to assign it value. The opposite is also possible, which is to re-inhabit remnant sanctuaries and secure them from exactly those kinds of firms, setting aside nature preserves protected by indigenous eco-villages. In the first case, you redesign businesses to become more resilient by not being rapists, and in the second, you simply disappear your culture into the fabric of the forest and become virtually invisible, quietly restoring the pre-Anthropocene climate as nothing out of the normal for you. There will be people who incline towards either of these.
That was permaculture teacher, author, and activist Albert Bates speaking at the 15th Annual International Permaculture Convergence in London, September 9th, 2015. Albert hails from the farm in Tennessee. Find links to his blog and his works in my Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info.